It's like the idea of social presentation. And individuals, when we interact, we have sort of this persona, and we put forward to our friends, you know, stuff that we figure that they're going to react positively to, for the most part. So, you know, this idea is not really new.
You're listening to the Merged Marketing Podcast with David Lauch and Jason Hunt. Our mission with this show is to discuss all things business, digital marketing, sales, and mindset. It's our hope to empower entrepreneurs to get the most from their efforts so that they can focus on what they do best.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning into the Merge Marketing Podcast. My name is David, co-host and producer, along with my partner, Jason Hunt. Our episode today will be a discussion and debate about the extremely popular Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma. Originally, Jay and I were going to debate and dissect what the film's message was, but then we thought, who are we and what do we know? Instead, we reached out to someone that has the background and experience to talk about some of the complex issues that the film highlighted. Today, we're super pleased to welcome Corey Turnbull to the show. Corey is a counselor in private practice in downtown Toronto. His practice primarily aims to make counseling more approachable for men who wouldn't normally consider it. Corey completed his Master of Science degree in psychology with the University of Liverpool and is currently pursuing a Master's of Arts degree in counseling psychology with Yorkville University. Corey, welcome to our show today.
Thank you very much, David. Pleasure to be here.
Awesome. Well, we're really excited to have you on today. And for those that are listening today that haven't seen the film, which I'd be super shocked about, its central message to social media users was to basically put down your phones and stay off social media because the algorithms have been designed to manipulate you. Now, the goal of today's episode is not to try and debate whether or not their claims are true, because it is undeniable that tech companies like Facebook are able to influence our daily lives more so than ever before in ways that we can't even predict. But we as a society really need to take accountability and control back for ourselves as well. So, Corey, we'll get started, and I'd really just love to hear your initial thoughts about the film when you gave it a watch.
Yeah, well, thank you. I quite liked it, and I mean, a lot of this stuff has been part of the dialogue, I guess, we've been having about social media for the past few years. But it was interesting to get the really the more precise information on how exactly that direction of attention and engagement works. So I like that part.
Yeah, and that was one of the things. It's a good point you bring up, is this stuff is not new. Like, we've known for a long time about things like tech companies being able to control what we do or what we see, or knowing what we do and what we see, and data collection. Like, that isn't necessarily a new thing. So, and same with obviously anxiety and depression and all of the other mental health things that they talked about is not necessarily new. So I'm not sure if it was such a fair depiction of the real problem here.
One thing I like that they mentioned, I think it was towards the end, is about how to react to this information, right? And I think someone mentioned the word choice, you know, and if we think about it as approaching any device with intent, you know, I'm going to go in, I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to put it down. I think it kind of gives us an idea of how to use it more responsibly and avoid some of those negative effects.
One thing that that has come of this, and a lot, even my wife, after we watched it, she didn't want to touch her social media for a week. You know, having this, you know, putting her foot down and being like, I can't touch social anymore. Let's see if I can actually put my phone down for a week and not touch it. That's been kind of the effect that this has had, or that at least this has brought to light. But being totally honest, I tried watching this movie twice and I fell asleep twice. For real. Okay. I didn't even make it through the entire movie. I mean, keep in mind, you know, I'm a digital marketer, so I've kind of understood, you know, behavioral, you know, I don't want to say manipulation, but you know, behavioral, the ways that Facebook advertising uses its algorithm to get in front of those users, right? And it is an algorithm. It's basically trained to put ads in front of you based on your previous behaviors, right? They want you to obviously click. But I guess at the end of the day, my point is that that is creating a better user experience for the user. If you are going to see ads that you have a tendency to click on because you're curious or inquisitive, that is naturally going to be a better experience for you. What are your thoughts on that, Corey?
The part that I think I wanted to react to right there is when you mentioned about how the algorithm puts advertising in front of you that it, you know, guesses that you're interested in. And I think the idea that it's like the idea of social presentation, right? And individuals, when we interact, we have sort of this persona, and we put forward to our friends, you know, stuff that we figure that they're going to react positively to, for the most part. So, you know, this idea is not really new. And I think it just sort of uses almost what people would use in conversation. You know, some things are going to be more interesting, right? So it's intelligent.
So, and I think the way it was portrayed in the movie was very antagonistic or very negative. It was brought forth in a negative light. I thought that was that's a great example that you just brought up. It's like, this is essentially what people do in conversation, is bring things to light and have conversations and talk about topics that matter to the people they're talking to. Mm-hmm. I think that's such an important point, because essentially that's what the algorithm is trying to do, is trying to be that person on the other end to have these conversations or present you with things that you're actually naturally interested in. But the movie portrays that as very negative and addictive. And maybe that's a good segue to the next portion of this chat.
Yeah. And I think that addictive element and the negative element really comes in with the frequency and the duration of use, right? So everything becomes a little more amplified. And the studies I've read on that really speak to that frequency and duration. How much are we confronted with all this this stuff that's catering to our interests specifically?
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the things that that I recognize about myself is, and for a lot of people, we don't truly understand how our minds work. As a human species, we don't get it. But there's obviously psychologists out there and people that study this stuff to really understand how the mind works and how to quote unquote manipulate the human mind. And so that was one of the points that they made, was that these developers and these engineers took these courses and designed the platforms in a way to make it that addictive, to make it seem like you can't control yourself and that you don't know that you're doing it, kind of like they used gambling as an example. So I found that super compelling. I mean, when I watch this documentary and other documentaries like this on Netflix, I always take it with a grain of salt, knowing that, you know, there's always more to it than what you see, and they're usually presented in a way where it's more so on one side versus the other, and this one was very much portrayed that way. But it was interesting to hear that they really designed these things with that sort of human psychology in mind, where we can't really control ourselves. I don't know.
And gambling is a really good example to point out, because they mentioned that positive intermittent reinforcement, right? We don't know when we're going to get the like or the next person, you know, commenting on a photo or whatever. But the gambling is a really good example, right? Because it is an illustration of that point that they mentioned about the positive intermittent reinforcement, that we don't know when we're going to get that next like or something, right? So it's, you post something and then you know, you wait, and then eventually you get the hit. So it's like you win at the lottery machine or whatever those things are. And that's how it really gets that addictive aspect.
Yeah. And there was two things that was brought up in the film that I didn't quite understand. And maybe you have a little bit more background, obviously, in this, that you might have gotten it. So it referenced two things: dopamine deficit states and the pleasure pain balance. So what do these two statements mean to you, and how can people be better aware of them?
Dopamine deficit state, pleasure playing about. Okay. Well, the dopamine deficit state just seems like a tongue twister for me right now. But that's essentially like, imagine you're on Instagram or, you know, let's say Facebook, for example, and you post a picture and nobody's commenting or nobody's liking it. And, you know, normally they would be. So what's going on, right? It, I mean, it's not my area of expertise specifically that state, but one would be craving for it as if you're craving whatever drug you would normally use, for example. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like a withdrawal, right? So it it heightens that anxiety almost around getting it. Mm-hmm. And pleasure pain, you know, what that makes me think of in terms of this is the dosing of approval was a phrase they used at one point, you know, and that the approval, I guess, is the, you know, would be the pleasure aspect. Mm-hmm. And the pain would be, in my view, the dissatisfaction that we get from comparisons that we make. Mm-hmm. 'Cause social, especially a lot of social media use has been linked to an increased tendency to make those comparisons where we see other people as superior, you know, whether they're more fit or they're, you know, having a better life that, you know, according to how we see it. So we make more of those comparisons and as a consequence feel worse about ourselves. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's where this whole impact on self-esteem starts creeping in.
Mm-hmm. It's important to, because I mean, you can get that same type of feeling. It doesn't necessarily need to be on a social media platform. You can go to the gym and feel the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, you totally can. But I find they really made social media, they really demonized it, you know, or they brought something to light, which was, you know, the addictive tendencies that come with, you know, browsing through your social media. I mean, like there's time, you can become addicted to the cookie jar. You can become addicted to gaming. There's so many different things out there, but this was shining the spotlight on social media. But one thing I didn't like about the movie, and I don't think they did, they talked about this after I fell asleep, but did they have a solution to the problem? Was there any mention of an actual solution? And if not, just sitting here talking amongst the three of us, what is the solution that could be implemented to kind of curb these issues?
Mm-hmm. A couple of things. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say that solutions that they mentioned, you know, for example, turning off notifications so it's not grabbing your attention at times when you're not wanting to direct your attention to that, right? So avoiding the distraction aspect. The element of choice, you know, exercising your own choice and as to when and how much you're going to use it as much as possible. But I kind of want to come back to your comment with the gym. They did mention a lot of negatives, right? But there actually are a couple positives that we can find in social media use too. So when people compare themselves to people who are, or who they perceive to be more fit, for example, it actually can motivate people to go to the gym and work out more, you know? Yep. And there's that window where if it's motivating you to get healthier, great. But if you overdo it, right, and then you don't see yourself realistically and you can have this whole dysmorphia, then it becomes a problem. But there is this window of space where it can be positive.
Absolutely. I think, Dave, you want to comment on that?
I do, and just because we're on the topic of kind of solutions right now, and I think there's a ton of solutions to everything that was discussed in the film. I think the problem is that Facebook and YouTube and Google and all these companies aren't making those changes because it's not necessarily in their best interest. One thing I thought of was when I was a kid and you'd wake up every single Saturday morning and watch cartoons, and they use this as an example, there were restrictions put in place for television networks where certain advertisers and ads could not run during that time to protect children from seeing things that they shouldn't be seeing while they're watching cartoons. Pretty simple. So, hey, if you're a alcohol company, sorry, you can't advertise between this time. You're going to have to wait until noon, whatever. Okay. So that seems like an easy thing to implement on YouTube, for example, because now children are not watching TV on network television anymore. They're watching their cartoons on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
So we could do something like that where they could censor the ads that run.
That doesn't fix the problem of the addiction, right? Like people will still be addicted. And the solution that I was thinking for that is, I mean, what kind of restriction or what kind of things do they have in place for people that have issues with alcoholism or gambling? There's a way you can do it on social media to limit the amount of activity or amount of time that you spend on the platform. For example, maybe you have an hour a day time limit on Facebook. And then once you exceed that 1 hour, you can no longer log in. Mm-hmm. You know, this doesn't, like, this is not in their best interest to do that because it's less impressions mm-hmm. and less ad spend, right? Less ad dollars.
I think some people do that on their phones though themselves. No,
you have to yeah. control it yourself.
Yeah. But how does that prevent the alcoholic from seeing alcohol ads while they're on for that hour a day that they've allowed themselves to be on?
Mm-hmm. Part of it that just came to mind is that part of the problem is not always, you know, using the social media itself, but it's what content people are seeing, right? So, for example, there was one study I was reading last night about Twitter, for example, and there was an analysis done of almost 11,000 tweets, right? Stuff that mentioned achievement and various things that people saw as, you know, interesting were shared like 60% more, at least, if not more. But positive stuff, specifically stuff around positive mental health, were shared a lot less. Mm-hmm. So maybe there is some content that they can auto share and promote, like a public service announcement type idea, that's positive, that increases that ratio that people are exposed to.
It's interesting because you actually see people that are naturally doing that themselves these days. I don't know if you see the posts on Facebook where it's like, hey, here's a picture of me and my mother because I want to make the news feed more positive. Right. People are actually taking those initiatives individually. But you're saying, Corey, it's maybe a good suggestion to leave that up to the Facebooks and Twitters of the world to dictate how much positive content is fed through that feed compared to the negative and just control that balance. Essentially,
yeah. I aim to support it as a balance, at least, you know, because they do the keyword analysis or hashtags or whatever, and it would seem to be feasible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, even there was a point about, from an advertising perspective, which is what we do the majority of, is kind of changing the advertising structure, which, you know, I think would also be potentially effective as well. I don't know what exactly that would look like. So,
yeah, I think in the end of the day, it's considering that user experience, but also mm-hmm. being cognizant of it being a negative experience at that. And, you know, I mean, right now they have something for Facebook for kids, right? Mm-hmm. They have a totally different platform. Maybe that's where the direction things need to be heading, is having a very separate platform for those kids that are under 18 and a platform for adults who maybe have a better ability or understanding to control their behavior. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Right. And because I mean, Jay, you and I have talked about this lots. I do believe that that at the end of the day, you do have influence on what you see in the news feed, because we get a lot of complaints of people saying, all I see is negative stuff in the news feed or this mm-hmm. and that, and I don't want to see it. And it comes down to what you're engaging with on the platform. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why you're seeing it. So if you're seeing negative stuff, it's because you're engaging with negative stuff. Mm-hmm. And I believe that, because for the most part, I see stuff that's relevant to me in my news feed. But at the end of the day, Facebook still has ultimate control over what you see. And it's mm-hmm. interesting to me that you could have two people in the same place with similar interests, but still have very, very unique, you know, experiences on the platform, which, you know, kind of lends to the point they made about fake news being a major issue now and being able to influence and, you know, overthrow countries and governments. And it's honestly, you could very easily get yourself down a rabbit hole by accidentally clicking on something you didn't mean to, and now you're going mm-hmm. to see that stuff that you may not want to see in the feed,
or falling asleep. I don't know if you've ever fallen asleep watching YouTube and then woken up a couple hours later with a video that, oh my god, you know,
yeah,
how did I get here?
That's funny, and that algorithms got you now, because those could have been mixed martial arts videos that you've been watching for the last 2 hours, and you might not have any interest in mixed martial arts, but YouTube thinks you do. So it's funny, I get that on Facebook now. Like, I've watched a couple MMA videos, and now mm-hmm. Facebook thinks I'm a huge MMA fan, so every mm-hmm. second video is an MMA fight. And it's like, that's exactly what David said, you know, it's that user experience, and you can customize it, and Facebook's looking at the things that you look at. People complain because they always see baby pictures in their newsfeed, you know, and that's why they just don't want to see baby pictures, but they continue to like friends' baby pictures. So right. That's just feeding the algorithm. Right.
Yeah, that's funny. That's where I'm at right now. I'm seeing a ton of baby pictures and people pregnant. And Jay, I'm actually not liking any of them. But I think it's just where I'm at in my life, what age I'm at. Everybody kind of, all my friends are my age, and they're at that point now where they're starting to have kids. And anyways, so Corey, social media aside for just a second, in your practice, are you noticing more self-esteem and self-confidence or lack thereof issues kind of within the last few years?
Yeah. So the self-esteem is a big issue. And I'm surprised how much of it is around body image. A lot of guys these days, and it was more than I was expecting going into it. And there is the, you know, I'm too heavy, I'm too thin, et cetera. But increasingly, there's a lot more, I'm not muscular enough. You know, I'm not this, you know, ideal image that I have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if some guys are in that area where, you know, they'll take steps, you know, behaviorally to do, they'll go to the gym, they'll, you know, start having some shakes or whatever. And that's fine. But there are a few where it's really getting to their self-confidence. You know, I don't think I'm enough. Right. And that's a bit of a problem.
Yeah. And the reason I asked that question is because I mentioned earlier that the film really referenced that depression and anxiety rates are higher than they've ever been and are growing exponentially, which I definitely do believe. But I'm wondering if it's, like I said before, fair to blame something like social media for this, or is it simply that because it's 2020, we are tracking, treating, and recognizing these issues now more than ever before, right? So like maybe depression and anxiety was a thing 20 years ago amongst a lot of people, but we didn't really know what it was. Mm-hmm. Maybe we weren't really tracking it, or there was just the stigma that still exists, but not as much as it did. So like, are we actually seeing a higher rate of it, or is it just perceived because we're more progressive?
So I think there's a few things there. One of which, you know, there, you may have a point on that we're, you know, we're looking forward and treating it, so we want to see more, but also the studies that look at social media use and compare it, for example, to see how it's correlated to self-esteem or these other, you know, issues, they control for that, right? So they'll see that all other things being equal, more social media use does correlate to more of this problem. And relevant right now during this COVID pandemic, you know, there was a study that actually found that increased social media use does lead to, or is correlated with anyway, that whole correlation causation thing, but it is correlated to more anxiety, more likely to be anxiety. Now, whether people are actually more anxious and looking for news constantly, or they're seeing news that is making them more anxious, that I don't know.
Yeah. Or could it be that they're consuming their time on a mobile device when they should be doing other things?
Potentially.
I mean, I just know myself. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's been nights where I've been consumed with TikTok, and I had plans of going out and running 4K, but next thing I know, I look at my watch or I look at my phone and it's 10:30 at night and it's just too late. So, you know, I become a victim to the actual social media being addictive to the point where I'm missing out on responsibilities and things that I need to be doing.
And now a word from our sponsors.
Are you ready to have your local business stand out from the rest? Guelph Website Design is ready to apply their creativity and expertise for you after discussing your overall goals, to get down to the core of who you really are and what you're hoping your business achieves. Go on and check out guelphwebsitedesign.ca. They're only a call away.
One thing from my experience is where I'm looking at more often than not depression or signs of depression in men is that the way we recognize it is also evolving. So it's kind of to David's point too, right? That because men don't necessarily express depression the same way as women do, the likelihood of being irritable is higher. The likelihood of drinking to mask it is higher. You know, like any behavior that would fit more into this more masculine, you know, view of things is a coping mechanism that's more likely to come out. And guys, not necessarily as likely to feel that, you know, I'm sad, I'm worthless, and, you know, whatever, but are more likely to exteriorize it, you know? So, and I think recognizing more of that, we're getting more guys sort of in that basket of people who experience depression than we did previously, recognizing it more.
Yeah.
Do you find, Corey, or can you even conceptualize the fact that, you know, social media could actually be a remedy in some cases? Like, honestly,
a remedy to what? Depression and anxiety?
In some cases, like, for example, like Lewis Howes, whose mantra is, you know, to be great, encouraging people to be great. There's a lot of influencers out there that are very inspirational and provide you that boost to go out there and go work out or go out there and live a better life, be great. Mm-hmm. In those cases, I can find influencers like that to be remedies for some of these issues that men might be feeling.
And I think that comes back to what I said earlier too, about, you know, increasing the balance of positive things you're consuming on social, in terms of messages on social media. Definitely, yeah. Would be helpful.
Yeah, because here's the flip side of that, and I agree with what you've both said, but I think that you're engaging with somebody like Lewis Howes, who is spitting out only positive stuff and helping people grow as individuals, absolutely 100%. But at the same time, you must also have that aspect of
comparison.
And you see this guy who's super successful, beautiful girlfriend, driving nice cars, rich, in shape, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden your mind goes there.
Mm-hmm.
How do you control that? And like, right? Because that is a great example. You got a guy that's so positive, trying to help people, but at the same time, you can easily fall into the trap of comparing.
I like to make the... Okay, go ahead, Corey. So you go ahead and then I'll hop in.
That's right. I was just going to say that speaks to this idea, like you're mentioning, David, about dissatisfaction, you know, life dissatisfaction by comparison. And I think that the remedy to that ultimately is not really what we're doing on social media, but what we do when we're not on social media. Mm-hmm. So for example, a couple antidotes to that, if you want to call it that, is gratitude and something called mental subtraction. So if we spend some time, you know, just being thankful of the things that we have in our life, especially, you know, before you go to bed, it's determined to be more effective at that point in time. But if you do it every day, you know, and think of several things, eventually your brain starts scanning your environment for things that you do have to be thankful for, right? So it shifts, it helps us shift into a state of mind where we're more satisfied with what we have, more comfortable with ourselves, and not, and perhaps less influenced by the satisfaction we get when we're online. The other technique is that mental subtraction, where we think of something that we have in our life that is positive, and then we imagine our life without it, right? And then all of a sudden we are in the position that has the thing that's positive, you know, as compared to this imaginary scenario where we don't have it. So we kind of flip the role around a bit. And I think, yeah, I think things like that offline might help us tolerate better the effects online.
I think a huge part of it would be self-awareness, right? And to kind of, you know, touch on that, Corey, absolutely. It's being self-aware of where you are and what you like with the Lewis Howes example and or any sort of influencer example, when you have somebody on a bar here that may make you feel a little insecure. You know, I'm just reflecting on personal experience, and this is not a blanket for everybody. But when I look at somebody like that, this is where I want to be. I am self-aware of where I am now, and I need to know the in-between. What are those steps that I need to take to get to where that person is? And that's kind of the way I've always sort of looked at it. And I think that might be, I think, like I said, the self-awareness piece is a huge piece of this.
And by doing it the way you just mentioned, framing it that way, you make it more realistic, and you make it, you create a bridge, you know, you create those steps from A to B. And I think, and you start focusing on that. And I think that's good.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you brought up two amazing techniques and tactics for our listeners, for sure. And I think that kind of leads to the next point, is I think we all kind of have a duty to educate people on how to cope with this stuff and how to deal with this stuff, because we can't assume that everybody has the level of self-awareness about themselves that maybe Jay has, or maybe Gary V has, or somebody like that, right? So like, for those that maybe not aren't as self-aware, we have potentially a duty to educate them on how this works and how they can cope through it. So those two strategies were amazing. It's practicing gratitude. And while you were saying that, I was looking down because I thought I had it right here. I have the 5-minute journal beside my bed. And so I do that every single morning and every single night for months and months and months. I've kind of fallen out of it the last couple months, but for the most part, I would do that every single day. And then the point about imagining your life without something in it is another really good one as well. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with Gary V, but that's what he does. And that's why he's so grateful and why he's so positive, is because he takes it to the extreme. Like, he thinks, like, when he's dealing with an issue or something that's stressful, he just thinks, you know what? Like, are my kids alive? They could be dead. My parents could die tomorrow. Like, extreme stuff. And then it just kind of puts them back in check and gives them some perspective. And like, life's not actually that bad.
Yeah. Shifting perspective is always useful, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those are some good tactics for sure.
Yeah. How did you find using the journal? Like, did you find much of a shift in...
You know, it's I was also thinking about that as you were talking about it, because it was tough for me. Sometimes I would notice a difference and I would enjoy doing it, and then other times I wouldn't. And I just wonder if the times where I wasn't really benefiting from it, was that just because at that point it was just such a routine that I was doing it subconsciously? I don't know. But what are your thoughts? Is that something that you get your patients to do?
Depending on what they're dealing with, yeah. Especially if people have issues with negative thinking and constantly thinking negatively about things in their life and whatnot, I always recommend the gratitude journal to help them shift perspective and start getting more automatic positive thoughts. Mm-hmm. I'm skeptical about everything. That's kind of my nature. So when I first learned about this, I tried it for about 6 months, I think it was. And I did notice a shift. I did notice a more positive shift. I noticed maybe, I don't know if calmness is really the right word, but it was a certain contentedness that was a bit more noticeable, I think. So it's useful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, because it's about celebrating the small wins sometimes. And I know for myself, I'm super ambitious and I want to achieve a lot in life, which can often leave me very unsatisfied and very unhappy with where I'm at or what I'm doing sometimes, because it's not happening quick enough. And so by practicing something like gratitude, it really, makes you think about, this life is long. I have a lot to be grateful for. Things are going well every single day. There's things to be thankful for every single day, and I'll eventually get to where I want to be.
And feel a little more fulfilled along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Jay, what do you do?
You know,
you can't just be this perfect human and just be so self-fulfilled and self-aware and just like...
Well, I'll tell you right now, one big difference between myself and you, David, is I have 3 kids at home that are waiting to jump all over me to keep my mind off of anything else. So, whether it's where I have a very clear work-life balance, I get home, the phone, work, everything is put on the counter, and I'm fully there. I'm fully sitting there with my family and dedicated to them till I put them to bed at night. I might hop on the phone, might hop on the computer for a couple hours, but I also always leave my mobile phone downstairs. Never comes up to bed with me. It's always downstairs. I've been doing that for years, because I know my tendencies, and I'm self-aware that I do have the tendency to become addicted to picking up that phone and be lost for hours if I don't do that. So it's taking control and putting measures in place to avoid anything like that, and having a clear work-life balance, right? It's key.
Yeah, I like that no phone upstairs rule. I've had to implement that too. Otherwise, I mean, there's only so many times you can refresh your email and there's nothing left coming in. So it's tempting.
That's right.
Man, you know, it's funny. Like, Jay, I didn't know you did that. I'm actually shocked that you don't bring your phone into the bedroom. I thought you would for sure. But here's my thought and why I don't do it. How the heck am I going to get up? I don't have one of those old school alarms anymore. So like, what do you do?
Dude, it's 21st century. Get an Alexa clock next to your bed.
Oh, God.
We'll put the phone out of arm's reach if you have it in your room.
Yeah, fair enough.
Have to roll out of bed at least to get it.
Yeah. And then the kids part. Well, I'm a little ways away from that. So I don't know. Maybe I'll get a dog or something, and I'll have someone to take care of. Perfect. Yeah. Well, Corey, I don't know if you had any other thoughts, maybe that you wanted to share with our audience today about the film, about social media, about how we can improve our self-esteem and self-confidence. We've really appreciated you on today, but if there's any closing thoughts you wanted to make.
And nothing comes to mind as a final thought, really. But it's been fun. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Corey, what's the best way that our audience can get in touch with you in case anybody has any questions?
The practice I have is under the business name Guys Resolve. So they can go to guysresolve.com and send me an email or call. Contact info is on there.
Awesome.
Awesome. Thank you again, Corey. And we end our show every single week with the same question. And that is, if you could choose one person, dead or alive, to represent your brand, who would it be and why?
Well, it has to be me. That's what people are getting, right?
You can't choose yourself. You can't choose yourself. There must be someone famous, maybe a family member, anybody to represent your brand.
I have to say my friend Victor. I always admire how calm and reasonable he is, and we've had many a good conversation. So,
awesome. Well, Victor, it is. Okay. Well, thank you again very much for coming on today, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Cool. Take care.
Cool. Another great episode. You know, it's funny because originally, we were not going to have a guest on for this episode, but I did a bit of outreach and Corey offered his time to us to talk about the social dilemma, which is great because we got some really good insight from a professional. I have my thoughts on the film still, but, I fell asleep twice for a reason,
Yeah. I mean, I agree. It was dry at times. For people that are aware of this stuff, you could tell at certain times, like, holy, they're just overblowing this. It's not accurate at all, or whatever it might be. But I just want you to know, Jay, it is okay for you to think some things about it are accurate and problematic, even though you're a Facebook advertiser. Because here's the reality. Facebook, Instagram, all these social media platforms, there's a lot of good. And especially for businesses, especially for small businesses. But there's some negative consequences that we have to be aware of. And we're not really sure what their long-term effects are going to be.
Hey, this is not news to me. Why do you think I put the phone downstairs? Why do you think I don't bring the phone to bed at night? Because I am fully aware of the dangers that come with social media. But I am also aware and I have control over whether or not how I deal with that potential addiction. I am not going to fill up my cookie jar or my pantry cupboard with potato chips every single night because I know what's going to happen if I have potato chips, chocolate, and cookies in my cupboard. I'm going to eat it.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying here is if you know that you have a problem with social media, and again, if you got to be old enough, maybe there's this 18 and plus Facebook experience that needs to happen. But if you are aware of what happens when you consume social media, at scale and the repercussions that come with it, then control it. And, we're in this position now where people are pointing their fingers at social media and saying, no, you can't leave this control up to the people. You have to control it for them. But I'm saying, like, my thing is, like, yeah, there's issues out there. There's issues with everything in life. But take the control yourself if you can to harness or hold back that addiction. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And I think we can really help people and educate people on how they can potentially take control of their news feed and take control of their addiction if they have one, because we're in a position to be able to do something like that, and perhaps this was a stepping stone to that. So I hope that this episode really brought a lot of value to our audience, and if not, those two tactics that Corey shared were money for sure, and I know that I do them both. So
two tactics, repeat, what are they again?
They were practicing gratitude. Could be a 5-minute journal, and imagining your life without something in it.
imagining your life without something in it, and gratitude points every day. The 5-minute journal, because we didn't really get into what the 5-minute journal is. Is that just, is the premise behind it, you spend 5 minutes in the morning and at night just writing things you're thankful for? Is that what it is?
100%. So there's like three questions that you answer in the morning, and then three questions that you answer before bed. And it's, you know,
same questions.
They're a little bit different. The morning is, you know, what three things am I looking forward to today? And an I am statement. So an I am statement is like affirming something about yourself that you might not believe. We all have these self-esteem issues or imposter syndrome. So it's an I am statement. And then at night, it's what three amazing things happened today. And I forget the other two, but it's a great journal.
How long have you been doing it?
So I was doing it for probably about 5-6 months, and I actually got my partner Janelle doing it as well. So we were doing it together every single day. And then, quite honestly, I've actually fallen out of it for the last couple months, and I've really been meaning to get back into it. So I did give it a really good run, though. It was about 6 months.
Cool. Got to keep it consistent, though.
Yeah, 100%. I would say that's consistent. Six months, but I need to get back into it. And if nothing else, it's really just a great like kind of journal to look back on, like, whoa, what happened on this day in 2019 or 2020. So
sorry, I think the best part of today's episode, I think you're right, and you hit the nail on the head there a second ago, it's bringing light to how problematic it can be if you don't control that experience. And I really like doubling down on that narrative and really diving deep into it. I hope everybody who's listening today does have that takeaway. You know, don't let it control you. You got to control it, right?
100%.
Cool. Okay. Any closing thoughts, David?
Just the usual. Leave that 5-star review. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss a single episode of the Merge Marketing Podcast, because why would you want to do that? And until next time, close it with something.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something. I was gonna say, until next time, boom, you got to work on that. Until next time, what is it? All right, we'll work on that. Thanks again, everybody. Tell all your friends. We'll see you next week.